Alrighty, this is Bio 160, and it's Thursday, August 28th, and we're going to finish up chemistry and move on to the next chapter, which is cells, and probably won't spend a whole lot of time on cells, but a little bit of time on cells, and then we're going to have a quiz on chemistry. So maybe let's just review real quick chemistry. What are the three subatomic particles? Protons, neutrons, and electrons. Which one has no charge? The neutron. The neutron, right. And so we're going to stick these subatomic particles in different parts of an atom. What are the two parts of an atom you can stick these particles in? The nucleus or orbitals. What particle goes in an orbital? Electron. Yeah, electron. And in the nucleus, any particles go in the nucleus? The neutron can. The neutron can go in the nucleus, as well as the proton can go in there. That's right. So that's that forms an atom. How come we have different atoms, different elements? What makes one element different from another element? For instance, like that hydrogen up over there on the very top row. I don't have my ruler. Ah, here's a ruler. Here is hydrogen. What makes that hydrogen different than, say, sodium? Number of protons in nucleus, right? What do we call that number? It's got a name. Atomic number, right? And you see it right here. 19 protons for this element. That's potassium. And I think it's table 2.2 that you have to know the English names and the chemical symbol for these elements. Like potassium is K, sodium is S. I lied, right? Sodium is Na. What is S? Sulfur, so you can't be confused. You got to look at that. Some of these are real easy, like C is carbon, right? And I is iodine, but what is iron? Fe. So there's some tricks along the line that you have to know. Okay. And then we talked about chemical reactions. You have products always forming from what? Products are formed from reactants, so reactants form products. Let's see, we talked about pH too. That can be a little confusing. pH is a measure of what? What is pH is? A measure of? Yeah, the acidity or the hydrogen ion concentration in solution. Hydrogen ion concentration. And as the hydrogen ion concentration increases, what happens to the acidity? Yeah, as hydrogen ion concentration goes up, acidity goes up. But what about the pH number? It goes down, it goes the opposite way, right? So it's a little strange. You got to become a little familiar with that. Okay, we also then start talking about organic molecules, and there's four important classes of organic molecules in your body. And then there's some minor subclasses, but these are the major classes of organic molecules in your body. What are they? What are the four major kinds of organic molecules? You got carbohydrates is one, lipids is one, proteins is one, and nucleic acids are the other, right? What are the building blocks of a protein? Oh, I didn't cover that yet, maybe. Amino acid are the building blocks of protein. What are the building blocks of a carbohydrate? Oh, you can't see that. Let me put the mirror up. Okay. The building block of a carbohydrate could be glucose, because glucose is a monosaccharide. We can put two monosaccharides together to get a disaccharide. So monosaccharide is a building block of a disaccharide. And a specific example of a monosaccharide is glucose. And if we put thousands of glucose molecules together, we don't get a disaccharide, we get a polysaccharide. And some examples of that would be starch or glycogen. Starch is what plants make. That's just glucose. Thousands of glucose molecules put together. In our bodies, we make a similar kind of compound that is pure glucose. Thousands of glucose molecules joined together, but we don't call it starch, we call it glycogen. And glycogen is stored in muscle, and it's stored in the liver because it's an energy source for us. Short-term energy source. And I think we talked about lipids last time a little bit. All right, but you know what, before we go, let's just review carbohydrates a little bit. Here is an example of glucose. Glucose has 6 carbons in it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And for every carbon, you have what? You have an H, 2, and an O. So that's why a long time ago when people first started studying something about sugars, for every carbon they found a, like a water molecule. So they call these carbon hydrates. Right, so that's where that term comes from. So this is a really long molecule. It can bend back on itself and form this cyclic structure, and we can, instead of drawing it out real complicated looking like that, we can just abbreviate that drawing and make it look like that. So that's just a diagram for a monosaccharide, which is a building block for a polysaccharide. So here's that glucose. Put two of them together, you get a disaccharide. If you put many of them together, you get something that's either called glycogen if it's in an animal or starch if it's in a plant. So starch or glycogen is a storage form of what molecule? What is starch? Yes, somebody said it right. Glycogen and starch is a storage form of this guy right here. And what's that guy right there? Right there, glucose. Right. So starch and glycogen is just a storage form of glucose. So when you eat bread or tortilla, or rice, potato, you're eating starch, but what is it that you're really eating? Glucose. It's just a sugar, right? It's just a sugar. All right, so that's the important thing about understanding building blocks for various compounds. All right, lipids. Lipids are fats or oils. They don't like to dissolve in water. So we call those compounds hydrophobic. Hydro meaning water, phobic meaning afraid of water. And you know that if you get some oil on your clothes, you can't just use water to wash it off, like butter or something. You need soap to do that. So this is a totally different kind of compound. For instance, a carbohydrate likes to dissolve in water. It's hydrophilic because it has polarity associated with it, but lipids have none. So some fats, let's look at some fats. Fats are just these really long hydrocarbon chains. There's no charges on them whatsoever. So this right here would be an example of a fatty acid. A fatty acid is really, really long. Here is another fatty acid over here. And then here's a third fatty acid. And these three fatty acids can be joined to this other molecule, which is what we call glycerol. Glycerol just has 3 carbons on it. So it's like half of a glucose molecule. It's just half of a glucose. And your body can modify that half of a glucose to put these 3 fatty acids on it. And the resulting molecule is what we call a triglyceride. And some of you might be familiar with that term because when you get a blood sample taken, sometimes we measure triglycerides to see if you have the right amount in your body. Because if it's too high, that's really bad for you. It produces cardiovascular disease. All right, so that would be a triglyceride. Another kind of lipid that you have in your body, instead of being a triglyceride, has this kind of shape. Has these 4 ring structures that are put together like this. This is the general shape of a steroid. Have you ever heard of a steroid? Yeah, probably. Could be bad news. There are things called anabolic steroids like testosterone that will make you build lean body mass like muscles and things like that. They have this kind of shape. Cholesterol has this kind of shape. Oh, here's cholesterol. It's modified a little bit, but it still has that basic shape. And who's heard of cholesterol? Anybody heard of cholesterol? A lot of people, yeah, okay. Because that can be really bad for you too. If you have a lot of cholesterol in your body, that is also a sign for cardiovascular disease, or it actually might produce cardiovascular disease. Okay, so, and it could kill you, right. All right, but, so having too high a level of cholesterol is really bad, but cholesterol is the precursor for steroids that are in your body, like estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and other kinds of regulatory hormones. So without cholesterol in your body a little bit, you wouldn't be able to make sex hormones. So you would be asexual. You wouldn't be able to reproduce is what that means, right? So having a little bit is what? A really good thing. Having too much is bad because it can kill you. So the right level is proper. Okay, so, and that's a lipid. Cholesterol does not like to dissolve in water either. And the last compound is a protein. And we said, a lot of people know this already before taking this kind of class, is that proteins are made from building blocks we call amino acids. And there are 20 different kinds of amino acids. I don't think I'm going to show you any in particular, right? But they all have a little bit different shape to them. And they can be put together to produce a protein. 8 of these 20 amino acids are essential. And you have a number of essential nutrients in your body. So let's just say what an essential nutrient is. Essential means that you have to have it to be healthy, but your body cannot make it by itself. Your body cannot make an essential nutrient. So that means if you need it in your body and your body can't build it for you, where do you get it from? From your diet, from the food that you eat. So 20 of these amino acids you have to have in your diet, or you'll be deficient, won't be able to make certain kinds of proteins. And proteins in your body form structure, like hair, nails, skin, things like that. Other kinds of proteins are important because they turn out to be enzymes and they control chemical reactions. So proteins are kind of fascinating because they're involved with both the anatomy of your body, which is, what's the anatomy of your body? The structure, as well as the physiology of your body. Proteins are involved with the physiology of your body. What's the physiology of your body? How it functions. So proteins do both of those, control the physiology as well as build the structure. Okay. So this is what a general amino acid will look like, this right here. So what does this C stand for?
Carbon.
That's a carbon atom. And that H is a hydrogen. And so we see a C and two oxygens and a hydrogen right here. This is an acid group. This is a carboxyl group. This is an acid group over here. And over here, what does that N stand for?
Nitrogen.
And an NH2 is an amino group. And all amino acids have this acid group and this amino group over here in this location. So guess what we call this molecule generally? We call it an amino acid because that's the groups that it has on the molecule. Now this R, I've never talked about this R, I don't believe. You won't find it on the periodic table over there because it's not an element. R stands for that it can be any number of different kinds of things. It could be a carbon, or it could be two carbons, or three carbons, or five, or it could be a ring structure, or it could even be a sulfur.
Is that something that's not known?
So it's something that's known. We just put an R right there saying that there's a lot of variability and it could be a whole range of different kinds of things. And even though an amino acid has this one kind of similar structure in all these positions, different amino acids will be different in this location right here. And that will give different proteins different kinds of shapes or different kinds of functions because there's some variability. So for instance, here's one amino acid that's called cysteine. It has a sulfur in this location. That's the only amino acid that has a sulfur in this location. We would call that cysteine. And I would never ask you to recognize this molecule. I'm just trying to show you that in this location here, there's variability. And I think S is one of the symbols you have to know, though, so that just kind of reinforces. And I could ask you, oh, what's the atomic number for sulfur? Why is sulfur sulfur? Because it has? How would you figure that out? You would go over to the periodic table and find S, and the atomic number over there is 16. Okay? All right, let's look at another amino acid. Here is phenylalanine right here. And I've got some little drawings on there. But look, here's that carboxyl group. Here's that amino group. So this is what? An amino acid. And in the R position, we don't see sulfur. We see something pretty complicated. We see a big ring structure right here. So this is what we call phenylalanine. It's just another amino acid. And we can join these two amino acids together by removing this hydrogen and removing this OH group. And what's H1H2O? What's that?
Water.
That's water. By pulling a water out of these two molecules, so we get a water, these two amino acids can be joined together with a peptide bond, and that's the beginning of a protein. That's how proteins are made, by pulling a water molecule out between two amino acids, and these amino acids get stuck together with a nice strong covalent bond. And then to digest a protein, the opposite has to happen. Your body has to find a water molecule, break it apart, and then stick it back between these two amino acids as they're separated. Okay. So proteins can make enzymes. Enzymes will control chemical reactions in our body. And let's see if I have a picture of different kinds of proteins right here. So a protein, you should think of a protein as a chain that you have around your neck. It's not really a thread. It's a very long structure, and it's not branched, but every amino acid is behaving like a link in that chain. So this amino acid right here might have, I really don't want to count them up, but it looks like it might have like 35 or 40 different links in it. So it's going to have 35 or 40 amino acids, and it could be all the same amino acid, or it could be any of the other 20 amino acids that are joined together. Okay, so this right here, this linear sequence of amino acids are what we call the primary structure of a protein. So it's amino acid 1, and then amino acid number 2, number 3, and then if you know the names, you could call amino acid number 1 over here by its name. That might be a cysteine, that might be a phenylalanine, or they all might just be cysteine. That would be the primary structure of this particular protein. And depending on the amino acids that are next to each other here, this protein might take a little bit different shape. It might form this nice coil right here, this coiled structure. And that's what we would call an alpha helix. This is a helix, a helical structure. Or a protein might actually form something that looks like an accordion. And that is all determined by what kind of groups are located in that R position. So this is what we call the secondary structure of a protein. Some proteins will form coils, and others, this beta pleated sheet over here. That's the secondary structure. So what I would like for you to know is, what's the building block of this secondary structure? What allows a protein to either form a coil or this accordion shape? It all depends on what amino acids are next to each other in this protein. And so what do we call it? What do we call it when we know what the sequence of amino acids is in a protein? It's got a certain structure. What structure is that of a protein? When we just know the sequence of amino acids. Say if it's all cysteine or all phenylalanine or cysteine, phenylalanine, cysteine repeating over and over and over again. That's what we call the primary structure of a protein. Just if we know the sequence of amino acids. And if that sequence is correct, that might form this beta pleated sheet, that's the secondary structure, or this alpha helix right here, that's a secondary structure. So the building block of secondary structure is really the primary structure of a protein. Right, so the secondary structure all depends on what this primary structure is. If the primary structure changes, guess what has to happen, or what usually happens to the secondary structure? It changes as well. The shape of that protein changes. Furthermore, this protein might be really long, and we can see some areas where there's a helix right here. Here's another area that has a helix. And then the protein is going to fold on itself, just like if you were to take a chain that's around your neck and put it in your pocket, it would still stay nice and long. What would happen to it? It would coil up. It would bend up into all kinds of different shapes, and if it's in there a long time, it might even form a knot that's really hard to get out, right? Because it just all coils up in funny different ways. Well, proteins can do that same thing when it's inside of a cell. So here we see that nice long chain made up of all those different amino acids, and we can see this coil here and coil here, but it has other kinds of bends and curves to it as well, besides the alpha helix right here. And so when a protein forms this overall shape, that's what we call the tertiary structure of a protein. So tertiary is what I have right here, this number 3 with a little degree sign. The tertiary structure is the real overall three-dimensional shape of that particular protein. Okay, so for instance, the proteins that make up your hair, what kind of structure do you think they look like? Okay, but that number 3 kind of looks like a ball. The proteins that make up your hair, do you think that they're like a ball or are they long? They're probably long because your hair kind of takes that shape, right? So the tertiary structure of the proteins that are in our hair, okay, that make up hair, are really long compared to they are deep or wide. But there are other proteins in our bodies that are more like a ball or globular like this. Okay, so tertiary structure is important because it determines the shape of things that make up our body. Okay. All right, so that's proteins, primary structure, secondary structure, and tertiary structure. The last kind of organic molecule that we're going to look at is a nucleic acid. And a nucleic acid could be one of two different kinds. There can be something called DNA, and there can be something called RNA. Two different kinds of nucleic acids in our body. And nucleic acids, like DNA, is the kind of nucleic acid that makes up chromosomes. Does anybody know where we find chromosomes in our body? What part of our bodies? Okay, yes, that DNA. It's inside the nucleus of our cells, and that's really, we're going to see that in the next chapter. But DNA makes up chromosomes, and these are inside our nucleus. And the chromosomes contain information on how to make proteins. And these proteins that chromosomes can make can have two different abilities. It has the ability to make structure, but it also has the ability to control function inside our body. Right? So chromosomes are important because it contains the blueprint for how to build our body, but also how to control it, how it functions. Both of these things. And the other kind of nucleic acid is an RNA, ribonucleic acid. And ribonucleic acid will just copy the information that's in DNA and bring it to the cytoplasm so that that information can be used to make a protein. So DNA never leaves the nucleus. It stays inside the nucleus. But proteins are made in the cytoplasm, so the information in DNA has to be converted into RNA first, and then the RNA goes into the cytoplasm to make a protein. So I actually want to cross that out. Nucleic acid is up over here. The building blocks. Let's talk about the building blocks of DNA and RNA. In both cases, they are what we call nucleic acids. Nucleic acids are the building blocks for both RNA and DNA. So let's see if I got some kind of picture of a nucleic acid. Oh, no, I wrote it wrong. Not nucleic acid, I wrote it down twice wrong. Nucleotide. Nucleotide. So nucleotides are the building block of nucleic acids. Nucleotide is the building block of nucleic acid. So what does a nucleotide look like? That's what I'm going to show you right now. So here's an example of a nucleotide, and it's not a very complicated kind of picture because we're simplifying it. At each one of these junctions right here is a carbon atom, and this right here, this S, doesn't stand for Superman. All right, doesn't stand for sulfur, it stands for sugar. So nucleotide, every nucleotide has a sugar molecule, and it's a 5-carbon sugar, so it's not a glucose, it's what we call ribose. It's a 5-carbon sugar. On one end of the sugar, there's a phosphate group. Now that P right there does stand for phosphate that's on that periodic table. And this block right over here doesn't mean B, That means that that's just a basic group. It's just a basic group, and maybe we'll talk about what kind of groups we find over here. But a nucleotide has these three parts to it, a base, a sugar, and a phosphate group. So in each case, just like that. And remember, when we talked about carbohydrates, what can we do with a monosaccharide? We can join two monosaccharides, put them together to make a more complicated molecule called a disaccharide by pulling out a water molecule. Or we can make a polysaccharide by putting thousands of these molecules together, right? And for lipids, we could take fatty acids and have them bond to a glycerol molecule to make a triglyceride. So a lot of biochemicals, right, we can take the building block and join them together to form a next more complicated molecule. So in terms of proteins, what's another way of saying that? What's the building block of a protein? Amino acid, right? We can put amino acids together to make a protein. Well, how do we make a nucleic acid? We take a bunch of nucleotides and put them together. And when we do, this is the structure that we get out of it. All right, so that's just the basic look of a nucleotide. And when we put a nucleotide, we put a bunch of nucleotides together to get nucleic acid, we see that it forms this nice big long chain like this. And it's just a repeating unit of phosphate, sugar, phosphate, sugar, phosphate, sugar, on and on and on down the line. And where's the base? Is it part of the chain? It's actually kind of sticking out to the side. So the base is always sticking out to the side. So that's an example of a nucleic acid. And it just so happens that this right here would be a pretty good example of RNA because I only see one strand of nucleotides put together. So RNA is single-stranded. But the interesting thing about nucleic acids is that if we have one strand over here, we can put another strand next to it, and it's going to form some bonds between the strands. And when we see a double-stranded structure made up of nucleic acids, just like that, that's got to be DNA. So DNA is double-stranded. RNA is always going to be single-stranded because the bases will come together and form bonds. So when I look at this structure right here, it kind of reminds me of a ladder. Right? So here's a handrail over here, and there's a handrail over here. And what's in the middle of the ladder? On either side you have handrails. You've got the steps, right? So in terms of DNA, the handrails are made out of alternating units of sugar, phosphate, all the way up and down the molecule. But the steps are made out of the bases that are joining together. So DNA is double-stranded, RNA is single-stranded. DNA is found in the nucleus because it makes chromosomes. And inside the nucleus, the DNA nucleic acids are used to make RNA. And then RNA can leave the nucleus, so where we find RNA is in the outside in the cell. The space outside the nucleus is what we call cytoplasm. And you don't ever find DNA in the cytoplasm, but you find RNA, and then that RNA that's in the cytoplasm is used to make a protein. So the information in DNA that's in the chromosome turns into information in the cytoplasm that's used to make protein. Okay, so that's nucleic acids. Let's see if I got anything else to say. Is that the last page? Yeah, page 11, huh? Okay. So let's just review real quick, because I messed this up. What's the building block of a nucleic acid?
Nucleotide.
Right. What's the building block of protein? Amino acids. What's the building block of a polysaccharide? Okay. Could be a disaccharide or monosaccharide when you put them together. What's the building block of a lipid? Glycerol and three fatty acids when you put them together. Okay, and steroids and cholesterol are just molecules by themselves. The building block of a steroid is cholesterol. Okay, that's the best way to think of that. All right, and a phospholipid is similar to a triglyceride. And I'll just show you this because I think it's going to be important when we look at some pictures in the next chapter. So here we have a glycerol right here with three fatty acids attached to it. So guess what we call that? 1, 2, 3 is a triglyceride. That's a triglyceride. We can take off one of these fatty acids by putting a water molecule in here, and we can add a phosphate group to it. And it's going to look something like this. All right. So here's that glycerol with the two fatty acids. This part right here is not going to want to dissolve in water. That's what we're going to call a hydrophobic region. That's going to be the oily part of the molecule. But this part down over here, notice that it has a negative charge on this oxygen. And there's a positive charge on this nitrogen right here. This part of the molecule will like to dissolve in water. So this is an interesting molecule. It likes to dissolve in both oil and in water. It's pretty amazing in that sense. Furthermore, instead of drawing this out all the time, we can draw this big molecule, which is a phospholipid. We can draw this phospholipid to look like this, with these two legs right here. Sometimes we call these tails. And this head group, something that kind of looks like a head. This is where the phosphate group is, where that charge is, that minus sign. And these two legs represent what? These two tails represent these two really long fatty acids that are sticking out. This is the part of the molecule that doesn't like to dissolve in water. Okay, so let's take this molecule. Part of it likes to dissolve in water. Part of it does not like to dissolve in water. And let's play around with that. Did I do this last time? I did? I showed you the bottle? Oh, good. Okay, because you know exactly now where it goes, right? Okay. Fantastic. All right, so you know what? I think we're done with chemistry. So let's answer some of the questions. Some of the questions could be on the quiz coming up, but the questions at the end of the lecture notes right here are really important for the test. Right? So the test could have questions from the student study guide, from these questions, or it could be exam figures. Right? I could photocopy an exam figure that you have to label for the test. All right, so what's the first question? Okay, some nice definitions. What the heck is chemistry? What is it? It's a scientific study of?
Substances.
Yeah, the structure of substances, but something else too that's real important. The chemical reactions that they undergo, how certain substances can be converted into others. So that's chemistry, some chemical reactions. So we didn't really look at much in terms of chemical reactions in this chapter, but we just looked at some of the basic structure. So matter is anything that occupies space. Okay, it's composed of atoms. Yeah, it has weight. It's composed of atoms. And atoms can have different natures depending on what kind of element it is. How would you say that one element is different from another element? How is sulfur different than, say, carbon? By the number of protons that are inside the nucleus, right? And you can see the atomic number on that periodic table. So on the test, I think I'm going to give you a periodic table. I'm going to cover this one up. The other thing you have to know are these chemical symbols that you see on table 2.2, and maybe there's another table that has some other ones. So you got to know things like Mg, Na, K, probably CO and FE, CNO, P, right? Those would be good. I'm sure you have to know. S, you have to know. All right, so those are all different elements because they have different numbers of protons inside the nucleus. What else did we have to know? Oh, what's a molecule? When we put a number of atoms together, it could be the same element, could be different elements, but if we put two atoms together, that forms a molecule. So a molecule has a number of different atoms associated with it. Okay, and be able to use the periodic table, just like I showed you over there. Okay, number two, know the structure of an atom, including proton, neutron, electron, nucleus, and orbital. That's pretty easy, right? How many different spots does an atom have to put stuff? Two. It's got two places to put stuff. What are the two places?
Nucleus
and orbitals. And what goes in the nucleus? Protons and neutrons. And what goes in an orbital? Electrons. Plus, you should probably know the charge of those particles. Which one has no charge? Yeah, neutron. Good. Okay, so that's good. What is an electrolyte? Be able to describe an ion in terms of its valence. Yeah, what's an ion first? What's an ion? Yeah, it's an atom that gains or loses electrons, so that means that it has some kind of electrical charge. It's not neutral. So it's an atom that has an electrical charge on it. And there are some real important ones in biology. For instance, what? Like sodium gets a positive charge. It likes to give an electron away to somebody, so it becomes positive. So what kind of ion is this right here?
Sodium.
Okay, it's sodium. I don't know, maybe I didn't draw this nice figure for you. It's a cation. Yeah, because it has a positive charge. What's an anion? An ion that has a negative charge, right? Okay, so here is another important ion in your body. What's that? That's magnesium. Is it now a cation or an anion? That's a cation. But that doesn't describe it completely because this looks different than that, right? So that's a bivalent cation. This is a monovalent cation. Chlorine is what? Monovalent anion. Right. So these are all important ions in our body. And because they have a charge, right, when that charge starts to move around, that produces an electrical current in our body. So we're very electrical beings, actually, because we have all these ions that are moving around all the time. So another way that we talk about these very special ions that produce electricity in our body, we call these electrolytes. Electrolytes. Right? So these are electrolytes, and then you know how to talk about them. Okay. Did I miss anything for three? No, not really. Know the different kinds of chemical bonds and their relative strength. All right? I think in this class I'm going to ask you to know three kinds. Which is the strongest?
Covalent.
What's the middle one?
Ionic.
And what's the weakest?
Hydrogen.
Oh, good. Okay. And how would you describe a covalent bond? What's happening with the electrons? Electrons are being shared between two atoms. And for an ionic bond, what happens to electrons? One is donated and another atom accepts it, right? Donating and accepting. And hydrogen bonds are just due to an association between two polar molecules that have just a little bit difference in charge. Not nearly as big as, right, a whole valence charge right here, but just a little bit difference in electrical charge. And what can you tell me about opposite electrical charges? They attract each other. Same electrical charges will repel each other, right? So a hydrogen bond is when one little negative part of an atom is attracted to a little positive part of another atom or molecule someplace. Okay. What kind of bond is formed when ATP is made from ADP and inorganic phosphate? ATP is used in our body for what?
Energy.
Right, so there's a lot of energy in ATP. And when that ATP is broken down, it releases a lot of energy, so that's actually a very strong bond. The stronger the bond, more energy that's associated with it. So, yeah, from that you can surmise that that is a covalent bond. So ATP is held together with covalent bonds. What are an acid, a base, and a buffer? An acid is a compound that does what? It donates protons, it generates protons, and it puts them into solution. And a base is a compound that will take those protons out of solution. Right? So acids and bases can neutralize each other. If you put an acid and a base together, the acid puts a proton in solution, and the base puts an OH, and that OH will join with hydrogen to form H2O. Will neutralize each other. And a buffer is different than adding a base to an acidic solution. A buffer is a compound that will prevent a change in pH when either an acid or a base is added. So it doesn't really neutralize a solution. What pH is neutral?
7.
And a buffer will just maintain the pH of a solution at whatever it is. So a solution might be a pH of 2, which is very acidic, right? And so if you put a base into that solution, guess what's going to happen to the pH if there's a buffer in it? It's not going to change. That's right. It's going to stay the same. So it's not going to neutralize the acid. It's going to keep the pH the same at 2. Or if the pH is 8, it will keep the pH at 8. That's what a buffer does. So it doesn't neutralize the acidity. It just keeps the pH the same. So what the heck is pH? Yeah, it's a measure of the hydrogen ion concentration. So as more hydrogen ions are put into solution, what happens to the concentration? Does it go up or down? Yeah, it goes up. And does it become more acid or less acid as the concentration goes up? Nope. It becomes more acidic. Okay. As the hydrogen ion concentration increases, it becomes more acidic. But this is the hard part to figure out. What about the pH number? The pH number goes down. Okay, the pH number goes down as the acidity goes up, and the acidity goes up because the hydrogen ion concentration goes up. You get more of those hydrogen ions in there. Okay, and when the pH is 7, that means that it's a neutral pH. And when it's a neutral pH, then the number of hydrogen ions is equal to the number of hydroxide ions in solution. They're exactly equal at pH 7. And in that little chart you have in your book, the red and the blue, you can see if you look at the area at pH 7, okay, right about here, then, oh yeah. Okay, actually the length of this line right here, that's the number of hydrogen ions in solution. Here's the number of hydroxide ions in solution, and the length of this line is exactly equal to that length. So at pH 7, these lines are exactly equal. But as the hydrogen ion concentration increases, that means this line gets longer. What happens to the hydroxide ion concentration? It decreases, or the length of this line gets smaller. Okay? Just slides up and down like that. So pH. pH means if something gets more acidic, the pH number goes down the other way. Okay. What is an organic molecule? What's the definition? Just a straight definition. Yeah, a good definition would be by the elements that it contains, and it's got to contain two elements. It's got to contain at least one carbon, and that carbon has to have a hydrogen bound to it. So if it's got carbon and hydrogen, that's organic. Know the four kinds of organic molecules in the body. What are they? Proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, and nucleic acids. And probably the next part of the question is, know the building blocks. Yeah, what are the building blocks? Building block of protein is amino acid. Building block of nucleic acid is nucleotide. Building block of a polysaccharide is a monosaccharide. I would say monosaccharide. Could you give me an example of a monosaccharide? Glucose is a really good example of a monosaccharide. And then lastly, the building block of triglyceride. Triglyceride is made up of 3 fatty acids and a glycerol molecule, right? A little bit more complicated than a protein and carbohydrate, but That's okay. We got to learn some stuff in here. All right, and be able to describe a chemical reaction in terms of reactants and products. What's on the left-hand side of the equation? Yeah, so reactants always go to form products like that. Okay, so I think that's it. All right. Okay, so look at that over the weekend some coming up. I didn't look to see when our first test is. Who's got a syllabus? Does anybody have a syllabus? Is it next week?
No.
Oh, okay, following week. Thank goodness. You know what? We have class on Tuesday, but we don't have class on Monday. But we never have class on Monday, so we don't get a break. So we don't get gypped out of a class. That's okay. That's fine with me. Oh, okay. So I got a couple things here for you. Here's a sign-in sheet. Sign that and then pass it around. And then here are some notes for three. So I'll just go ahead and pass those back.
Yep.
Yeah, take one of these and pass it back. So this chapter is the cell. Yeah, here, here. And take one and pass it back. All right, so you should be getting a pretty good feel for the class right now. How it goes, they're going to go maybe not every chapter, but chapter by chapter, going through the lecture notes, answering the questions at the end of the lecture notes. But for the test, don't forget, you got to look at those exam figures, too. You got to study those. So how are those lecture notes going? Pretty much almost at the top of the room right there? Kind of close? All right, so we spent a lot of time looking at building blocks of molecules, complicated molecules, and we're going to use that same kind of concept as a theme in this chapter as well. And the first thing I want you to know about the cell is that it's really small. You can't see it. It's microscopic, and it's the basic building block of life. So if something is alive, it's got to be made out of cells. And if there's something that looks like if it's alive, but it's not really made out of a cell, then it's not alive. And if it's not alive, can you kill it?
No.
No, can't kill it. Okay. So there are a number of things that are alive. The cells in our body, bacteria are alive. And if you have a bacterial infection, you can treat that infection by doing what to those bacteria? You can use antibiotics because antibiotics are going to kill the bacteria, and then that stops your infection, your bacterial infection. And in order for something to be a cell, it's got to have nucleic acids, it's got to have DNA that controls how to make proteins and how to control activity in the cell, and it's got to have cytoplasm inside the cell, which to carry on the living processes. And there's another sort of interesting particle that produces infections. And that little particle does not have cytoplasm. It only has DNA surrounded by a hard shell. And that's called a virus. So if a virus doesn't have cytoplasm, we really can't say that it's alive. It's a non-living, it's really a crystal. So if something is not alive, what's impossible to do? You can't kill it. That's why viral infections are so dangerous, they're really hard to treat because they're not living organisms that we can kill. So that's really, I think, interesting. So we have to defeat viruses with other kinds of thinking, other kinds of treatment. So let's look and see what some definitions are, what is necessary to really be alive. All right, so the cell is a basic living unit of all organisms. If something is alive, it's got to be a cell or made up of cells. And our body is made up of trillions of cells, probably about 100 trillion, I think, kind of stands out in my mind. Okay, so lots and lots of cells. All life is cellular. The simplest organisms are just made out of a single cell. We call those unicellular. Anybody know an example? Anybody take a biology class and find out what a name for a unicellular organism is? It'd be like a paramecium, amoeba, things like that. Okay, these are unicellular organisms. They're composed of one cells. And humans are made, oh, right here, it says trillions of cells. That's why everybody knew that. Great, okay. Thus, we're not unicellular, but if you really want to insult somebody, you could call them, oh, you unicellular, such and such. But we're what? We're multicellular. Okay. And then within cells, there are specialized structures called organelles. There are little things inside cells, even smaller than a cell, which perform specific functions. And most of these organelles have a membrane around them, and all textbooks call that membrane bound. They're bound up by a membrane. Okay, they have, that just means that there's a membrane around them. So human cells can take different shapes, different forms. Here's a slide that shows different kinds of shapes of cells. Some kind of look like pancakes right here. They're flat cells. Other cells kind of look like footballs that's been stretched out. It has two pointy ends with a thick part in the middle. And then there's other cells that have this really weird shape. There's a part right here that's really big and thick that has a nucleus. And then it has these really long, stringy parts that shoot out from the main body of the cell. So this right here would be an example of what we might find to make up our skin, really flat cells. These right here would be muscle cells, like smooth muscle cells that are specialized for contraction. And this one right here is a nerve cell that's designed to send electrical information over long distances in our body. Hey, guess what this nerve cell uses to send electrical signals? We already talked about it. Yeah, electrolytes. Right, ions. It uses ions to move that electricity around in our body. Okay, and we're going to look a little bit more about that coming up. So cells can take different shapes, but let's start looking at just a general shape of a cell. All right, so here's a cell, and we put just about any kind of organelle that we're going to find in a cell in this one. But you know what? And I don't think we would ever find a cell in your body anywhere that looks like this one. It's got everything that any cell might have. But you don't probably have a cell that's got everything. Some of them, some cells have certain parts of this and other cells have other components. All right, so let's look at some components of this cell. This is just a generalized cell. So the cell begins at the cell membrane. Another name for the cell membrane is the plasma membrane. Everything inside the plasma membrane is really making life happen for this cell. So we call that cytoplasm. So cytoplasm is the living part of the cell. And outside the cell, we just call that extracellular material. And it's not living. It's got to be inside the cell membrane for it to be living. Furthermore, the cytoplasm has got two parts to it. It's got these structures that we see, and those structures, including the nucleus right here, those structures are what we call organelles. They're like almost like tiny cells. They're like little cells inside the big cell. And they have membranes around them, or most of them have membranes around them. And then there's the fluid in between the organelles. That fluid that's in between the organelles is what we call cytosol. So cytoplasm is both the fluid part plus the organelle part of a cell. So in order for something to be alive, it's got to have DNA plus this cytoplasm, which could be cytosol or organelles inside a cell. And a virus doesn't have any of that fluid stuff inside of it. Okay. So let's look at the first organelle. And that first organelle is really going to be the plasma membrane, because it's going to separate the inside world that's living compared to the outside world that's dead. And this is what the cell membrane looks like. So you might recognize a repeating pattern right here of a molecule that we've looked at already. Okay, we see a little head group right here with some tails sticking down. So this one unit right here is a phospholipid. So if we put thousands and thousands of phospholipids together, they're going to form this membrane. And just like that phospholipid that we stuck in the salad dressing bottle that automatically goes to that one little layer, these membranes will just automatically form like that as well. Because what is the solution? Okay, what's the solvent of the solution that's inside this cell? What's the solvent of this cytosol right here? What's the most common chemical in your body? That's going to be water, right? So the most common chemical is water, and the phosphate group is polar, so it wants to associate with water that's inside the cell. There's water outside of cells, so the phosphate group will want to associate with water outside the cell. But what can you tell me about these little legs that are sticking down? They're hydrophobic. They don't like water. They're the oil part of that phospholipid. And so they stick together away from the water that's in the cell and outside the cell, and they stick together where? Right on the inside of the membrane. So this membrane is sort of interesting because there's this big hydrophobic region that's used, okay, to keep water inside the cell, the inside the cell, and water that's outside, outside. So it's a barrier to any kind of polar compound. So the job of this plasma membrane is to separate the outside world from the inside world, to keep them separate, because this is what's living on the inside and this is what's dead on the outside. And this membrane can do that. The plasma membrane can do that. Here's a picture. Okay, but the membrane has got more than just phospholipids. The easiest and best description for a cell membrane, or the simplest description, is what we call a phospholipid bilayer. Because how many layers do you see right here of that phospholipid? You see two, phospholipid bilayer. Okay, but that phospholipid bilayer, we can add some things to it. Now, do you see phospholipids in here again? Yeah, they're all over the place, right? And the hydrophobic region is pointing to the inside of the membrane. And what's another lipid that we study besides triglycerides and phospholipids? Cholesterol. And can you see a little cholesterol molecule right here? See that little ring structure here and here? Right, that gives a little rigidity to the membrane. It makes the membrane stronger. And does cholesterol like to be on the inside of the membrane? Yeah, because it is hydrophobic as well. It doesn't want to be in water on the outside or inside of the cell. It wants to be within this little oily layer right here. And so that's where we find it. Membranes can also incorporate proteins. Some of the proteins you might find on one side of the membrane or the other. Other proteins can go all the way through. Because anything that has a charge, like a sodium or a potassium, can't go through the membrane. But your cell actually might want to move sodium and potassium or even a sugar molecule across the membrane, and there's got to be a way to do that. These protein molecules will allow different kinds of chemical compounds to go across the membrane because they have a hole or a channel in them or a tunnel. All right, so here is a protein that has a channel in it. So it allows other molecules to either enter or leave. And some of these molecules that have a tunnel or a channel in them might have a door or a gate. So at some time, the cell might open up the gate and allow these chemicals to move across the membrane. At other times, it might close that gate and prevent certain molecules to move across. All depends on what the living processes inside the cell need. So that's a nice control mechanism, right? Say if you have a doorway and you can either lock the door or not lock the door. So, for instance, we could like lock the doors right now and do the whole class over the weekend, okay? But that probably wouldn't be so much fun as what you might have planned already. All right, so that's what that little gate does. It allows certain things to go across the membrane that can't go across at other times. There are other proteins that might be embedded in the membrane because some cells are flat, some are columnar in nature, some take different shapes. And these proteins will give that cell a particular shape. And as a matter of fact, some cells will even squish themselves around. They're shapeshifters. They'll crawl around inside your body. And these proteins are necessary to change the shape of those cells so that they can slip around throughout your body. And Another kind of protein we have right here has a bunch of these little stop signs on it. Does anybody remember what this, that little stop sign was representing? What kind of molecule? A sugar, a monosaccharide. So would this be an example of a monosaccharide right here? With all of these stop signs put together, what would that be? How would you describe that? That would be a polysaccharide, right? That's a polysaccharide made up of all these monosaccharides right here. But we can see that these polysaccharides are not just straight chains, they can be branched. And these branches of these polysaccharides are attached to a protein, and you see this protein doesn't go through the membrane all the way, it's sticking out to the outside. Right, the branching pattern right here signifies who this cell belongs to. All the cells in your body are going to have a particular branching pattern. And your brothers and sisters are going to have a branching pattern that is similar, but still nonetheless a little bit different. And somebody that's not related to you, this branching pattern is even going to be what? More different. So this branching pattern is like an address or an identifier of all the cells saying that they belong to your body. And if it doesn't have the right branching pattern, then it belongs to some other organism. And what can you tell me about your body when it sees a cell that it recognizes that is not belonging to you in your body? The branching pattern of these sugar molecules is different. What is your body going to do? Shake hands and say, hey, welcome to this body right here? No. Your body is going to reject it. It's going to recognize it as being a foreign cell not belonging to you, and it's going to mount an immune response because your body doesn't know if it's a bacteria or a fungus, you know, or some other animal. So your body is going to reject it. Okay, it's going to develop an immune response. So these molecules are what we call antigens. So antigens are placed in the membrane as well for identification purposes. Because generally speaking, you shouldn't have cells from other people inside your body. There's only a couple circumstances where that would be good. When might that be a good idea? Blood transfusions, and we've got to be really careful because those antigens are on red blood cells. Only certain kinds of transfusions work. Or if you get a graft from somebody or an organ donation or something, your body is going to reject it because this branching pattern is different. So then we have to take medications to defeat that immune response, okay? And also to have kids, you need other cells from, right? If you're female, you need other cells from other bodies inside you to fertilize an egg. So there's mechanisms to stop that immune response for that short period of time. And there are couples that are maybe infertile because the body doesn't know how to stop that rejection. Right, and the female kills the sperm before fertilization takes place. That's one form of infertility. That's pretty easy to diagnose, and I think it's pretty easy to treat. Okay, easy for us to say. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop there, and because we're going to do the chemistry quiz. All right, so let's do a chemistry quiz. So you guys were really good last time. Some people are going to be done with this quiz before I even pass it out completely. So if you're done before I pass it out all the way, just sit in your seat because I want you to give me your quiz with your Scantron, and I just want to double check that you got your name on your Scantron and you got the A version or B version of the quiz or whatever.
You have mine.
I don't know if I do or not.